This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Western Michigan University is playing this weekend in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl in Boise. Kalamazoo Gazette sports reporter David Drew joins us to review the Broncos' football season and look ahead to Saturday's matchup with Air Force. But first, sometime next fall, Kalamazoo Valley Community College's new Healthy Living Campus is expected to open near downtown Kalamazoo. The Michigan Municipal League, along with city officials, the college, as well as business and residential interests, have developed an action plan for the area of the Edison neighborhood. It's designed to capitalize on, among other things, the new campus's proximity to Western Michigan University's medical school. Richard Murphy is Program Coordinator of Information and Policy Research for the Michigan Municipal League. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is called a placemaking study. Explain to our audience what you mean by placemaking.
Sure. Strategic placemaking is the idea that unique places matter, that every community is not the same, and that every neighborhood is not the same, and that these differences matter to residences and businesses. And the state of Michigan and our cities can attract those residents and businesses and keep them here by emphasizing those unique qualities that each of our communities have.
Kalamazoo was one of 12 cities across the state which was selected for one of these placemaking projects. Why was Kalamazoo chosen?
Well, Kalamazoo was chosen as a regional center in southwest Michigan, a place that is not just one of the largest cities in its region, but also a place that a lot of other residents of that region visit or travel to for work or otherwise are familiar in. So as a focal point of its part of Michigan, we felt it was a priority to work with them on one of their needs.
Do communities sometimes overlook the opportunity to take advantage of a new institution or a new campus when it comes to their town? And is that part of the reason for centering this particular placemaking project around a new campus developing near Kalamazoo's downtown?
Yeah, anchor institutions like hospitals and colleges are major economic drivers for communities, both in employment as well as the benefits they provide in education and healthcare and so forth. So making sure that the surrounding neighborhood and downtown are adequately leveraging the things that these institutions offer is important to local economic health.
You try to find some similar institutions, you know, some businesses, some nonprofits, and other things that share sort of a common interest for people who might be in that neighborhood and try to capitalize on that?
Right. And in this case, I think there was a very natural fit between the hospital and the WMU Medical School and KVCC's Healthy Living Campus, the farmers market, the park. All of these things in their own way contribute to the health and well-being of community residents. And so it was an easy fit for us since they had already recognized these connections amongst themselves when they approached us.
So one of the recommendations in Kalamazoo is to finalize plans for a 3-lane Portage Street to serve as a gateway to the health and wellness district and the core of the neighborhood. Explain why this is important if Kalamazoo is going to truly take advantage of this.
Well, this is an opportunity that a lot of communities are looking at to say, you know, where do we have roads that maybe we focused too much on one function of that road, which is moving traffic through a neighborhood or through a downtown, rather than balancing that with providing access to the things along that street and making it work for everyone, whether they are through travelers or residents of the neighborhood or traveling to a destination in that neighborhood, such as the new Healthy Living Campus. So looking at the opportunities along that street with a really fine-grained eye to what are the needs of traffic, how many people are traveling through, how many people are turning at each intersection, how do all the signals function, often exposes some opportunities to add back some of those missing functions of the street to make it work a little better.
One of the things you also say in the report is that some congestion is unavoidable in a thriving neighborhood. Do you sometimes, as you're putting these reports together, you have the idea of trying to get people to think about something besides just moving traffic quickly through a neighborhood? In other words, that while people don't like congestion, it may be necessary to have a little if you're going to do some of the other things that you hope to achieve.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we have to think about is, yeah, if there's no congestion whatsoever, that probably means you have some economic challenges, that people don't have places to go, jobs to get to, shopping to do, so they're staying home, and that's why they're not on the road. If you're going to have a thriving community, then you're not going to be the only one on the street. And so once in a while, you're going to have to see a little bit of congestion, whether that's 10 or 20 seconds extra waiting at a light or going a few miles under the speed limit for a little bit. So figuring out what the engineering standards are that are acceptable for, we're willing to have this quality travel for a car traveler and this quality of travel for a pedestrian in terms of safety and ease of access to get from one place to another, or this level of service for a bus rider, and measuring all of those criteria and how well that street works at an intersection by intersection level.
No one likes to sit in traffic. So when you lay this out in a report, is it something that requires a little bit of selling people on the idea that a little congestion is not going to be the end of the world?
Well, that's something that we had to look at with the college and the hospital and the city and the other stakeholders that were a part of this, is to say, the city has these standards that they're not going to let traffic get below a certain level. We have to maintain a certain quality of travel for the car traveler. And one of the opportunities there is recognizing that traffic doesn't just happen. Traffic is created by activities in the surrounding area. And the hospital and the community college and those other anchor institutions are major drivers of the traffic that's going through the neighborhood. So one of the things that they can do is help give their visitors and their employees and their students or patients other options for getting there, to say, if we can get some of our employees riding the bus or some of our students walking or biking from the surrounding neighborhoods, rather than just having everybody jump in a car and drive to campus and park there, that helps us control the traffic problem and gives us a little more room within those engineering considerations to make some of those changes to the street.
The report also says that Kalamazoo's farmers market should be a key player here, or an important part of placemaking for this part of the city. How does the farmers market fit in?
Well, the farmers market certainly is successful. It seems to be very popular within the community, which has its own challenges of congestion on a Saturday morning. But it's also somewhat out of the way. It's not necessarily on a major street. So it has peaks and lows. So figuring out how to make it a little more visible, perhaps, on days other than the major market days, how to add activities in, and whether expanding it within its existing location and perhaps looking at opportunities to expand market activities onto nearby properties, or looking at whether there might be a better location in the vicinity of the park to get it a little bit more exposure and maybe help it be something that people might walk to instead of driving to, or something that makes for a little bit more of a drop-in on the way to somewhere on a midweek market day.
And one of the things that the report says is this could require additional land being acquired at the current location, or perhaps, as you mentioned, identifying relocation options for the farmers market. These are kind of some tough calls to make, I suppose, for city planners and those sort of things. Are you just trying to lay out options here for them to consider?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a good problem for the market to have if it's hitting the limits of what it can do with its current location and size. So definitely we heard from the city that there was no interest in moving it to some other part of town, that it was important to keep in that neighborhood. So looking at what are the opportunities and what are some of the scenarios that they could examine if they want to facilitate additional growth of the market.
What sort of other land use decisions are going to have to be made that are going to determine what happens in this area of Kalamazoo?
for a neighborhood to be attractive to residents and allow them to walk or to bike or to use the bus and cover that whole range of neighborhood activities and access. You know, this is something that happens on a block by block and intersection by intersection and property by property scale. So the report does include a lot of recommendations for sidewalks and crosswalks and traffic signals and making sure that all of these pieces of the transportation infrastructure work together well. But the city is also looking at what the surrounding development look like. How does the Washington Square area regain its status as a neighborhood center that serves the surrounding community, and whether that's looking at the types of businesses that the city is trying to encourage to locate along the Portage Street corridor, or whether it's making sure that the buildings are located properly on the lot to facilitate both a car traveler and a pedestrian from the neighborhood trying to get to that business. These are conversations that I understand the Planning Commission and city staff are having right now about what are those really fine-grained details of how development affects the overall neighborhood life and experience.
So what happens next?
Well, what happens next? Certainly as the Kalamazoo Valley Community College has broken ground on their new campus, city staff are working with them and the other institutional actors in that neighborhood to figure out which pieces of the report they do want to pull out and implement themselves, and which things are maybe not instant wins, but are worth additional consideration. So at this point, they are the people who are going to be implementing any of the recommendations in this proposal.
Richard Murphy, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Richard Murphy is Program Coordinator of Information and Policy Research for the Michigan Municipal League. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A year after winning only one game, Western Michigan will finish this football season with at least 8 victories. They could get the 9th on Saturday against Air Force in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, which is being played in Boise. David Drew covers the Broncos for the Kalamazoo Gazette. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's first of all talk about how the Broncos turned it around this season. How do you go from one win to 8 in the span of just a year?
I think the best word to start with is remarkable. It really is when you look at just kind of how awful Western was in a lot of areas of the football field last year. And you bring back a lot of the same guys, but from day one of camp, Coach PJ Fleck said that this was a team in every aspect, from the locker room to the chemistry on the field. And he said that's something that was missing last year. So I think Coach Fleck really liked this team, regardless of what they were going to do. I think he liked their chances a lot more. And then obviously you bring in the MAC's top recruiting class, and that's going to help you. And we've seen Jarvion Franklin. We've seen some role players step in and help at times. So that's obviously been very important as well. And then you look at the play of quarterback Zach Terrell, and everyone kind of thought it was crazy when Coach Fleck said he had to complete 70% of his passes, because that's such a high number in college football. But here he is entering the bowl game, completing exactly 70% of his passes. And, you know, maybe he's not a game-changing quarterback, but he really is a great leader of that offense because he knows it so well and he spreads the ball around really well. And defensively, they've made a lot more plays, forced some more turnovers, and really have kind of taken a step forward there as well.
No one likes to lose, of course, but if you look at the Broncos' 4 losses this year, they were competitive in all of them. 2 of them are to the better teams in the MAC, Northern Illinois and Toledo. And Toledo, of course, was an overtime game with an extra point miss that ended that. The other 2 were to teams from Power 5 conferences. Purdue and Virginia Tech are not necessarily great teams from those conferences, but the Broncos were certainly in those games into the second half. Again, you don't like to lose, but if you look at those losses, do they say something about where Western's progressed?
Yeah, and it's something that I've talked with Coach Fleck about, especially after the Central Michigan win. And I believe that was six wins in a row, I believe. And he said, you know, this winning streak doesn't happen without that Toledo loss, because that really kind of, it just kind of maybe humbled them or opened their eyes, or kind of gave them, you know, that mental chip on their shoulder to take after that. But going back before that, and I've had several players tell me that they'd love to have that Purdue game back. And I was talking with Zach Terrell last week, and he said, you know, in the second half of that game, we really started to realize that we could be a special team. And he really mentioned the fact that he'd love to go back and start that game over. And then you look at the Virginia Tech loss, and they fumble the ball on the opening kickoff. So there's these things that you can go back and look at and say, well, this could be a 10-2, you know, maybe 9-3 team entering a bowl game. So it really is remarkable when you sit here and think about how far this team has come in a year.
And then against Northern Illinois, they were up two scores a couple different points in that game.
Yeah, I think that took everyone by surprise, even them, because they played really good football in the first half. And then in the second half, just uncharacteristic mistakes, turnovers. Defensively, they missed some assignments, and I really like the way that the players and Coach Fleck summed it up after. They just said, we weren't ready yet. You know, we're not ready for this big stage yet. But they're getting close, obviously, and I think that gives you a lot of hope for the future and a lot of reason to be excited.
If we look back at last season, of course, no one likes to talk about it very much because Western went 1-11, and the one game they won was against Massachusetts, and Massachusetts decided to go for two at the end rather than kick an extra point that probably would have sent it to overtime. But having said that, did the end of that season begin sort of the climb out of the hole, that they did win against Massachusetts, went to overtime against Eastern Michigan, played a competitive game against Central Michigan at home, and then went to Northern Illinois when Northern Illinois was still thinking they could get into what was then a BCS bowl. And while the Broncos did not come close to winning that game, they certainly didn't get blown out as bad as some people thought they just might going to DeKalb.
Yeah, I think you really hit it on the head there. I like to look at that Central Michigan game, and there was an interception return for a touchdown by Central Michigan that proved to be the game winner. And that was one where you're like, okay, this team might be on the right track here. And as you mentioned, the Northern Illinois game, I think everyone maybe in their right mind expected that to be probably about a 56-14 game. And Western was really in that game until the second half when Jordan Lynch took over. And that's kind of what Jordan Lynch did throughout most of his career. But yeah, I think towards the end of last season, some of the juniors and guys who are going to be coming back this year, I think they started to realize, hey, if we can continue to do things the right way, we might be in good shape.
So now as Western prepares to play Air Force, the Falcons have, as people have read in your stories in the Kalamazoo Gazette, a very unique offense. Will this be something that is very tough to prepare for the Broncos?
Unique is the best way to describe Air Force on both sides of the ball, really. Everyone likes to start with offense, so we'll start there. And they run the triple option, like Army and Navy both do as well. But they also spread the field. They like to go shotgun and throw the ball around a little bit as well. So talking with Coach Fleck and defensive coordinator Ed Pinkham and some of the other defensive players, there's a lot to prepare for this week, because in the triple option, if you make one mistake, well, there goes a 65-yard touchdown run. But the very next play, they're going to come out with four wide receivers and see if they can't beat you down the field or across the middle. And so there's a lot of things to think about there, and Coach Fleck really praised his scout team this week because they've had their hands full in trying to give the starting defense a really good look. And then you look at Air Force's defense, and they show a lot of different looks. They play a 3-4 defense, which you really don't see that often in college football. It's more of a NFL style that you see more nowadays, but they do a lot of movement before the ball. They like to confuse, especially offensive linemen. They like to give quarterbacks different looks. Are they blitzing? Are they not blitzing? So there's a lot to prepare for. And while they might be undersized, really at just about every position, they're tough. They're fast. They really play with kind of that military edge. I'm excited for this matchup, but it's also a scary matchup for a Western.
And it's a team much like Western, which is coming off a disappointing season and enjoying a pretty big turnaround.
Exactly. And if you're Air Force, if you're looking at Western Michigan, I think you're just as worried about this Bronco offense, because every team Western has faced this year has kind of had a dilemma. Well, who do I stop? Do I stop Jarvion Franklin? Do I stop Zach Terrell from getting outside and making some big plays down the field? They've got Daniel Braverman, who likes to run the end around and can also do some damage in the short passing game and make big plays. So, yeah, this is going to be an exciting matchup for both defenses. I think whichever team can play the better defense wins this. And I'm not saying the team has to come away and shut out the other team, but this, you know, this could be a 31-30 game that we're looking at when it's all said and done.
Many people going into the last week of the season believed that Western Michigan was headed for perhaps the Bahamas or Boca Raton, Florida. Instead ended up in Boise, which draws some groans, of course, from people who want to travel, think of going somewhere warm in December. But what are the advantages for Western of playing in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl?
There's a lot of them, and people might not realize that at their first glance because, oh, it's Boise, Idaho, and who wants to go further north to play a cold weather bowl game? But the fact is, it might be about 50 degrees on Saturday in Boise, Idaho, which is uncharacteristic, but this is a game that's in its 18th edition in Boise. Everything that I've heard from Western side, from I've talked to a few Air Force people, they put on a great bowl, and the town embraces it. They do a lot of great community things before the game. The Boise State football fans come out and support the game as well, and that in itself is great because there's three first-year bowl games that the MAC is tied in with this year, and it's Boca Raton, Bahamas, and the Camellia Bowl. And so just right off the bat, you're talking about first-year bowl games, and there's unknowns. How is a local community going to support it? What are going to be some of the slip-ups? And there's going to be some at some level, and there's things to work out there. So Western is in a stable bowl. It's proven to be that over the last 17 years. So from that standpoint, I think Western's in a great spot.
They're also one of the first bowls to kick off this season. Is there potentially an advantage in terms of the viewership that there may be people who don't necessarily have a rooting interest for Western Michigan or Air Force? Is it because it's one of the first bowl games, maybe they say, well, I'm ready for some football again?
I look at all of the bowl matchups that MAC teams are in, and I think outside of Northern Illinois against Marshall, which is a pretty special matchup, I look at this Air Force and Western matchup as probably being the second best matchup simply because of the brand power that Air Force carries. Let's say you're a Purdue fan and you're tuning in on a 5:45, which is prime time on the first day of bowl season, and you're flipping through the channels and you see Air Force playing. Well, you know, the casual fan isn't going to know much about Western Michigan, but they're going to recognize the name Air Force. So maybe they tune in and watch some of that game. Whereas that same night, Bowling Green plays South Alabama. And that's no offense to either school, but neither of those schools carries the same kind of brand power that Air Force does. And I believe there's also the potential that Air Force's game gets picked up on the Armed Forces Network. So there's a lot of chances for exposure here, and it's the first day of bowl season, primetime slot on a Saturday. A lot of good things going for Western if you sit down and really look at it.
Financially, not all bowl games are created equal. There are schools that go and play in a bowl game and it ends up, they end up paying for the privilege, that they end up losing money by the time they get their payout, but they've paid for travel costs and those sort of things. Financially, is this a pretty good deal for Western?
It really is. You know, you don't go into a bowl game outside of a BCS game or a playoff game to really make money. But Western is in a better spot now than, let's say, 2008 with the Texas Bowl, where they had to purchase 50,000 tickets at a cost of, I believe, $450,000. Well, that puts you in the hole pretty quickly, and they weren't able to get out and took one of the biggest hits across the country that year. This year, they receive a payout of $475,000. That comes from the Mid-American Conference office, and you have to take your expenses out of that. And while they might not end up making money on this, they're certainly not going to lose a whole lot of money, I believe, on this. So that is definitely an advantage. I compare that to the Bahamas Bowl, where, first of all, you have to get passports for X number of players, the travel down there, travel around the island, trying to get fans to come down there. That's an expense. And so, again, I keep going back to this, but Western really is in a good spot going into the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
In terms of building the program and moving forward, how much would it mean for Western to get the first bowl win in program history?
This would be absolutely huge because it's going to come over a team that's proven to be a winner over the years, and for the fact that it's bowl win number one, and it's coming in year two of a coach whose tenure, I think everyone kind of rolled their eyes at times, and PJ Fleck and all the things he was trying to do to build excitement with this program. And how crazy would it be that, you know, the Broncos win a bowl game on Saturday and all of a sudden people are worried about Coach Fleck leaving potentially after this? But really, it's hard to say that Western's in any kind of a bad spot regardless of what happens, but a win over Air Force would put Western in a really good spot going into next year.
Is PJ Fleck's name likely to continue coming up when people are talking about job openings at other schools?
I think you're going to continue to see it simply because he is a different kind of coach. He's young. He's energetic. He brings a lot of energy to your program right away. And he's proven he can win now. So that's always going to get your attention if you're a program that's coming off of a couple losing seasons and looking for that spark of a head coach. But I think he's still a year or two away from really getting some serious attention from a school. If you look at it, his signature win right now is over Central Michigan. He did come close, but he is still winless against the top two, I guess you'd say, Deans of the MAC in Toledo and in Northern Illinois. So I think a couple of wins over those schools, maybe a MAC championship, maybe even a division title, a couple bowl wins, then we can have some serious discussions about maybe Coach Fleck taking his coaching skills elsewhere.
You have reported that Western and PJ Fleck are working on a contract extension. If that gets finalized sometime soon, can Bronco fans at least relax for this offseason and realize that PJ Fleck will be coming back for a third season?
I certainly think you can relax this offseason. Now, what that means down the road, I don't know. But I think when you look at it, I think it is a good commitment by Western Michigan to say, hey, we realize what we have. I don't know any of the terms of the deal, but I can assume that maybe he's going to get a pay raise. Maybe from Western Michigan's standpoint, the buyout clause increases if there is future interest in Coach Fleck's coaching services, so that Western comes out of it a little bit on the better end of it than they would now. But I think overall, it is just a commitment by Western Michigan to say, hey, look, we're trying to be pretty serious about our football program moving forward.
As you said, it's hard to look ahead and not see a bright future for Western in football. What are some of the things that contribute to people thinking that 8-4 this year is likely to be at least that and maybe better in 2015?
You look at most positions and they're all coming back next year, to be honest, outside of a few players on defense and a couple offensive linemen. You're going to see basically the same team next year. And right now, Western's coaching staff is building, again, the top-rated recruiting class in the Mid-American Conference. So you're going to see even more depth. And I think what you're going to see now is these recruits who come in moving forward aren't necessarily going to play right away. And that's not a bad thing for a program, is to give a youngster a year or two to develop. Whereas you have some of these youngsters who played now are only going to get more playing time moving forward. So from a talent standpoint, things are only going to get better. And I think that leads to good things on the field as well.
David Drew, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
David Drew covers the Western Michigan Broncos for the Kalamazoo Gazette. Western will play Air Force in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl on Saturday in Boise. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at WMUK.org. Beginning in January, you'll have another opportunity to hear West Southwest. It will still air at 9:30 Monday and Thursday mornings. Starting January 5th, we'll have a replay of the show beginning at 3:30 Monday and Thursday afternoons. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.